Welcome to the Chicago Camps 2017 Prototypes, Process, and Play Design Leadership Conference podcast, sponsored by Balsamic. With Balsamic mockups, anyone can design great interfaces. And in partnership with Simplecast, publish your podcast the easy way at simplecast.fm. This podcast features Julia Karen Dietar, game designer and developer at Untame, and her lightning talk, Usability Testing and Development on a Shoestring Budget, from August 10th, 2017.
I'm going to try to go really fast because I have like 10 minutes and I'm a little over. I'm Julia Karen Dietar and I'm a game designer at Untame, and this, I'll be talking about doing this stuff. So, I worked on a game called Mushroom 11. It came out recently on desktop and mobile. This is sort of what it looks like. And it's a very experimental puzzle platformer where players sculpt a mushroom in order to solve puzzles. It won a few awards recently, the Apple Design Award and the Google Play Award this year, which I missed because baby, that was a bummer. This is the team. We're two married couples making this game. So as you can imagine, we bootstrapped most of the funding for this project ourselves, and we didn't have a lot of money on things like development and promotion and user testing. So I'm going to talk to you guys about like how we went, we kind of tried to solve the problem of how to do all this stuff without a lot of money, and hopefully you can take away some of the stuff that we've learned. So the game idea itself came out of something called the Global Game Jam. And for you guys who might not know what a game jam is, it's basically a hackathon. These are events that usually are designed around a theme, and you have a very, very short period of time in which to build whatever you're building. So the cool thing about the Global Game Jam is it's an annual event that happens at the same time all over the world for the same, around the same theme. So you get to feel like you're participating in this really cool event. But, game jams aren't just for really small teams or, people learning to do game development. A lot of big game studios use these as well. The most famous one would be Double Fine's Fortnite Amnesia, which is their two-week game jam that they publicize. Lots of reasons to do game jams or hackathons. The most obvious is design constraints, right? Most notably with theme and time. And having really low expectations allows for fearless experimentation, right? You're not going to make great software in 48 hours. You're just not. So that just frees you up to like kind of play around with these really crazy ideas that if you had more time or more resources, you would be too scared to maybe, participate in or recommend. It's also a really great way to try out new tech if you want to like switch to a different game engine or you want to switch to a different programming language. It's a really great way to hit the ground running. And then for larger game companies, before joining Untame, I worked at a mid-sized game studio where I implemented game jams. And the biggest takeaway was cross-disciplinary learning, especially bringing in people who don't know anything about development. Particularly like sales and marketing people, like having them on teams for like even a day just to get their hands messy with the process, it allows them to like sort of see how the sausage gets made. And they not only feel like they're more integrated as part of a team with, the developers and the designers and the artists, but they also like have a better understanding of what they're actually promoting and selling. So game jamming is another type of prototyping, right? And almost, prototyping is basically how our team, Untame, was able to really quickly cut development costs down because we were able to make iterations very, very quickly. So a lot of times before, people even write a line of code in software, they'll do paper prototyping, with just stuff that they have around them. For us, we used prototyping throughout the entire development of the game. As you can see here, this is one example of an idea we were testing. We don't care about the art. We just grab whatever we have. We don't care about optimization or whether it like looks great, right? We're just trying to figure out, like, is this idea worth pursuing, like, as fast as possible? Right, this iteration design is really, really important for all types of design, but I feel like for games it's even more important because for games there's such a wide open design space. Like, you can make a game about anything, right? It could be any kind of experience, it could be any kind of game system, and small changes can really impact that player experience. So it's really important to answer, to ask a lot of questions and get to those answers as fast as possible. One of the questions would be like, does the player know what they're doing? Which goes beyond just UI. Like, yes, UI is very important, and you need to know, like, what button do I press to make my guy go? But more importantly, like, where do people go when they're presented a wide open space? Do they have anything that's drawing their attention to a certain area in the map? Or do they know what items to craft in order to put together the weapon that they need to beat the boss? So these other kind of systematic questions are just as important, and you need to find, you know, figure that out really quickly. Another thing that games deal with a lot is something called difficulty ramp up. If you make a game too hard, too fast, you're going to frustrate your users. They're going to feel like, oh, I'm not good enough for this game. You know, I don't want to play it. If you make it too easy, then they're going to get bored. And the interesting design challenge for gamers is that you have, you know, a time scale along with this, right? You have beginners and expert players, and they could occupy the exact same space. So you have to be able to design your product so that, you know, you're making sure that the beginner has a good experience, and you're making sure that the expert player has a good experience. And then, of course, fundamentally, like, is the game itself fun? Like, is the action that you're doing interesting enough that you can expand that out to, you know, a 30-minute gameplay, right, or a 15-hour gameplay, or however long you want? That action has to be interesting. So the problem with all these questions, though, is that they need outside verification, right? A game designer can come up with a pretty good solution, maybe, of what they think might happen, but unless you get users to interact with it, you just don't know the answer to those questions. So, for example, this is just some of the iterations we had to go through to design a dynamic help system in our game. And this is like one small little aspect of our game that like half of the players won't even see, because it only pops up when players are really struggling in the beginning of the game. So, yeah, user testing. This is really, really important with every iteration that you do. And for us, we had absolutely no money to have any users, right? We didn't have any way of paying for users. One thing that we did really early on is that we had a lot of friends and other co-developers that we would co-op with or work with or have local meetups where we would share our products that we were working on. And this allowed us to get really fast feedback and expert feedback. A lot of our friends have experience behind them, so their feedback was really valuable. But the only problem with this is that you run through your users really, really quickly. So if you want to test like a question that relates to a new person, if they've seen your game or they've seen your product, they're not a new person anymore. You need to find somebody else. So meanwhile, separately, we were applying to all these festivals and contests so we could get into these shows so we could get promotion for our game and talk to the press and stuff like that. But we found out that these shows are really, really great for user testing as well. Most of the shows, the games that are being shown are not out yet, so they're in development. So there's this, you know, expectation that they could be, you know, tweaked, and they're not final. So this allows us to do things like A/B test different stations. Like a lot of these booths will have multiple stations, and we could actually do a physical A/B test where we can compare versions and see which one, you know, performs better. Another great thing about using shows is that there's so many people at these shows and there's so much hype around it that your users have like no buy-in whatsoever. Like unlike paying somebody to come into your lab and interact with your product, these users just, they don't care, right? As soon as they're frustrated or as soon as they are confused about your product, they're gonna go up and leave, and it's really easy to see where there's design flaws in your game. But it's also really important to know who the audience is. So for us, you know, these shows, they were able to give us a lot of demographic variation and regional differences. And this is important when observing your players, right? So, for example, we showed it South by Southwest, and the people who go to South by Southwest don't necessarily go there for video games, right? They go there for music, or they go there for art or something interactive. But they're not traditionally gamers, unlike maybe Gamescom or PAX Prime, where they are gamers. And gamers are going to have like a vocabulary that's different from non-gamers, right? They're going to have assumptions of what a platformer is and how should a game look or how should a game feel. And so those two groups of people might be stuck at, you know, different points of your interaction for different reasons. And if you can kind of understand where they're coming from, you'll have a better sense of what might be the problem. Another one is like identifying when a lot of people get stuck. And I feel like specifically for game designers, this is a problem, because game designers tend to be like, oh, they're stuck because they just haven't mastered this awesome challenge that I've made, right? Or they haven't like, you know, conquered the solution that, you know, I'm so brilliant, they just haven't figured it out yet. And they don't realize that, no, it's probably not that, it's probably a design flaw in your product. They don't know what they're doing, right? Or there's something that that game puzzle is not leading them to figure out. Another thing is unexpected behavior, which is always, this is what fascinates me about user experience. Like, you figure, you're like, as a designer, like, oh, people, they'll understand totally how to do this. And you put it in front of them and they do something completely different. And you're like, whoa, what is that all about? But it's really important to like try to get into their heads and understand why they're doing this behavior that you didn't expect for. And can you use it, you know, to better improve your design? Or does that mean your design is wrong and you have to scratch it and come up with something else? Don't lead the witness, right? This is really hard to do, we found, with conferences, specifically because you have press and you have journalists coming to you and being like, how do you play the game? What is your game about? Give me your pitch. And you have to be like, no, you should figure it out, right? You should play it. I'm not going to tell you how to solve the puzzles or what to do. Because once you do, then you can't use that data, right? You've sort of ruined that user. And then the other really important thing, the last part that I have, is collecting context to build a fan base. I mean, this sounds like very PR-ish, but it's really important to have a group of people that you can come back to after the show is over or when you have different versions of your product in the future, and you can reach out and ask them for some information on how they feel about it. But just note that when you do this, your users are, you know, your fan base is like really excited into your, about your product, right? Or really, they're like expert players. So you have to take that into consideration when you get that feedback. You have to sort of understand that they're not going to be your normal user. So that's it. Thanks. I hope that was interesting.
Thanks for listening to the Chicago Camps 2017 Prototypes, Process, and Play Design Leadership Conference podcast, sponsored by Balsamiq. With Balsamiq mockups, anyone can design great interfaces. And in partnership with Simplecast, publish your podcasts the easy way at simplecast.fm. Learn more about Chicago Camps events on our website at chicagocamps.org.